This is The End User, episode 126 for Thursday, March 7th. This is what we call the kibosh. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr.
We, here on the east coast of the United States, had a snow day today.
We did, although we didn't get much sticking snow, so I guess it's back to work tomorrow.
Yeah, I bet you the people who were a little north of where we're at got some snow, but it didn't stick here.
Or west, up in the mountains, or right. South, where the storm was stronger, but I guess Washington, D.C. is just a little snow pocket.
Well, that's all right. I'll take a day.
You already did.
So we've got
the tech news has not taken a day. It's
no,
trudging
it
ahead,
not.
And we're going to talk about it. This is a late show, so we've got a bunch of news.
Would you say that it was snowing tech news?
Yes, but not as hard as it was snowing here. I mean, we had some big snowflakes.
It's thunder snowing tech news. So let's let's
okay,
get into
it. Wasn't that momentous a week?
So Microsoft has actually relented its policy about the Office licensing, and they're going to allow you to transfer the instances of Office that you've bought from one machine to another or across reinstall of Windows and that kind of thing. Remember, we talked about all of their insane licensing, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And so they've finally heard the consumer, and they're making the change.
Well, that's great. Hopefully this will continue to be the case for products like this, you know, among Microsoft and even other companies. I mean, a lot of these companies who are making these very valuable software platforms are really locking them down way too much.
Yeah, I mean, I understand their licensing. I know it's too complicated, but I kind of understand why they're doing it. I wish they wouldn't do it, but I have a handle on it. And this one particular issue is something I could not relate to. I mean, it's wacko to suggest that if you reinstall Windows, you need to buy a new Office. That's a wacko idea, and I guess they've heard it now. So that's definitely a good thing.
Yeah, it's a very good thing. So the change is effective immediately, yep. And it's currently trickling down to all of their activation servers.
Yeah, so that's really, really encouraging to see them switch that up.
Yeah, great news, although pretty simple.
Yeah, definitely. Well, in other good news, it looks like we have a early look at the Roku 3. It's a $99 TV streaming box, and it looks pretty cool. You've got a brand new interface, which looks fantastic, at least compared to the old interface.
Yeah.
It still doesn't look fantastic compared to the Apple TV.
But functionally, it looks about on par.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, and then the remote is definitely a step up from the Apple TV.
Yeah,
which is great considering they're both $99. This remote has lots of motion sensor activation stuff, which is great because the new Roku 3 has Angry Birds pre-installed. And then my favorite new feature about this is that the remote has a headphone jack on it. You plug your headphones into the remote, and it kills the audio on the TV.
Yeah, that's a kind of cool feature.
I
do wonder a little bit, well, why don't we just use wireless earphones? I'm not quite sure why we're plugging a wire from the remote into your ear, but I know a lot of people haven't made that jump, and for those people who are indeed the majority, this is a fantastic way to consume your TV quietly, I suppose.
Right. Well, most people don't have wireless earphones. That's just simply the case.
Yep.
And I don't know how Roku would implement it, even if they did. I mean, they're not going to ship wireless earphones with their boxes. So this seems like a cheap, easy, effective solution for most people, including people with wireless earphones.
Yeah, well, all they'd have to do is throw a Bluetooth radio in it. I mean, I guess that would affect the cost some, but it would be a nice thing to have. Anyway, I acknowledge that I am among the few who are using wireless stereo earphones.
They're expensive, Chris.
Yes, they are. They are. That'll happen over time. You'll see these things come down over time and get integrated into products like this. So the new interface is getting pushed out to older Rokus, they've said, as well. And the currently active models of Roku are the LT, the HD, the 2XD, and the streaming stick. Remember, we were just talking about this.
Yeah, the streaming stick, which plugs into the back of your TV, and then you can control it with your TV remote, and you don't have to worry about it. You just have Roku inside your TV, which I also think is really cool.
Yeah, so it was unclear to me whether all of these were getting the update, but they did say that they were rolling it to older devices, as well as the new Roku 3 box.
Which do you mean, the new user interface?
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure it's whatever receivers can handle the software update.
Yeah, they said there's a new chip powering this Roku, and it's like 5 times faster, I think they said. So it's they've got a little more heft in there, and they can handle a little more load. Although, notably, there's still no YouTube app in there.
Yeah, I always thought that was a little bit odd.
Weird, right?
Right. But I have been using the Roku XD, and it's pretty slow.
Yeah. The older ones are definitely kind of slow, but that's what you get on the budget that they set. I mean, these boxes are so cheap. I guess the Apple TV is cheap as well.
The Apple TV is pretty fast, but it wasn't always.
Yeah. So anyway, it's encouraging to see them rolling along. I'd really like to see them throw in some TV features, some actual TV features. If they can do something like that, then I will buy in. I'm still keeping my ears perked up to see if there's anything that can actually replace my Windows Media Center. And to date, that is still not the case.
Yeah, well, your Windows Media Center was custom designed by you and is much more expensive than this. So I would imagine it's going to last you a while, as long as you can find a power supply that works with it.
Yeah, that's right. It's currently, my current power supply is burnt out. So I ordered a replacement. But anyways, I'm always keeping my ears open for stuff like this. And as soon as that day comes, I will be very excited if there's some kind of replacement for it.
All right. Last feature to mention on the Roku is that they have added a micro SD slot.
Yes.
And they, I don't know if they had the USB slot before. My version doesn't. But you can use either one for mass storage expansion.
Right. And they've also notably removed the analog outputs. So
that's true.
Uh-huh. There's only HDMI on this box now.
Okay, well, that would be a challenge if I were to try to hook up this Roku to a projector, which is what I'm currently doing to my Roku XD.
Oh, interesting. So it takes the analog output?
No, the projector has HDMI, but then I have to use analog for the sound.
Ah, okay.
Because the projector has no sound.
Yeah, the projector doesn't take sound over HDMI, so
That's right. Nor does it have an output for the sound from the HDMI.
Now, would it be fair for me to characterize you as a dual-band Wi-Fi enthusiast?
You could characterize me that. That is one of the more obscure enthusiasms that I have claimed on this show, but I'm going to go for it, yeah.
Yeah, so the new Roku 3 has dual-band Wi-Fi. You will be very, very happy.
Well, I would be happier if it had 802.11ac gigabit Wi-Fi, but I'll take...
You're going to have to wait on that one. You're going to have to wait a while.
Dual band is pretty good. And honestly, the difference in terms of media streaming between 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi and 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi is night and day.
Yeah, especially where I'm at here, we've got so much, we've got so many routers using the same air. If you can just get off the band that most everybody uses, it'll help out a lot.
Yes, that is true. So that is why I constantly scan the house for 2.4 gigahertz signals from other routers so that I can make sure that mine is still clear.
Right, and we have PSA in our last section here of top news, and that is that Evernote has leaked their database. So all of their passwords have been exposed, although they were salted and hashed, so that was good. They used an older algorithm called MD5, which is now considered to be... less secure than some of the more up-to-date algorithms like bcrypt or something like that. So they almost did it 100% correctly, but not quite. And then they were really good in their response. They immediately reset everyone's password. Yes. Which is the correct response. If you leak your database and there is any chance that a cracker can actually crack your hashes, you just want to reset it all just to be safe. And that's exactly what they did. So good on them for that social bit, even though they were using the outdated MD5 algorithm.
And furthermore, they've audited their security practices and are now featuring two-factor authentication for their accounts. It's coming out soon.
Yeah, and I gotta wonder if they updated their algorithm at the same time, because MD5, it used to be considered secure, but it is not considered secure anymore, and nobody should be using it.
Right. Well, at this point, we've issued so many public service announcements. I mean, if you use Evernote or Dropbox or Twitter and have the same password on any of those accounts with any other important accounts, you should probably change all of those passwords.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning maybe that is why you want to hash these passwords, is in case one of your customers is using that same password on a different service with the same login, like your email perhaps. So in order to protect them, you want to use these hashing algorithms so that if your database does leak, then people won't be able to actually see and use the passwords to try and get into other accounts. So you're right. From our perspective, from the end user perspective, if you just use unique passwords everywhere using a password manager, like what was yours, 1Password?
Yes, I use the number 1Password.
Right, and then LastPass is the one I use. If you use one of these things, you will be way better off.
Yeah, well, you have to use it in the way that you use the password manager to create individual passwords for each account.
Right. And
because some people will use LastPass or 1Password, as I did when I started, just to keep track of it. But you're still using the same password for everything.
Yeah, so I have LastPass generate 20-character random passwords for all of my sites anytime I sign up for something.
What if the site doesn't take 20 characters?
Then I'll have to ratchet it back, I suppose. I haven't run into one of those quite yet, though.
Okay. All right, well, that is the end user PSA for this week. If you have Evernote, your password has changed, but you probably already knew that.
Probably.
And with that, should we turn on our afterburners?
Yeah, please do. What do you got?
Okay, so the FCC announced in response to the new law on unlocking cell phones. Remember we talked about this a couple of weeks ago?
Right.
Congress passed a law that said unlocking smartphones without carrier permission would become illegal under an exemption of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. But the FCC is now investigating this ban to find out whether it is legal from a competition standpoint. And furthermore, the White House has made a public call to ban the ban, to overturn it.
Yeah, so this is what we call the kibosh. They're putting this kind of stuff into place, and then people are realizing that this is actually happening and then saying no to it, basically. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens there.
Right. Yeah, hopefully with the White House behind it, we can get this ban overturned, because people should be able to unlock their phones.
Yeah, definitely so. That's definitely good for competition to have that be an option. So Pandora is going to be instituting a 40-hour-per-month listening limit on their mobile applications. This had existed on their desktop application for a long time now, but they're finally going to roll this out to mobile. So if you had been taking advantage of unlimited streaming on Pandora mobile, then you're going to be in for a shock. Now, they do have some premium accounts that allow you to have more hours and more track changes and stuff like that. So have a look at the show notes. We've got a link to their posting, and be careful out there with your Pandora mobile.
Yeah, it's interesting. They say this will affect less than 4% of their monthly active listeners.
Right.
And the average listener only listens for 20 hours. But 4% seems like kind of a lot to me. And anecdotally, I would suspect that it's much higher. I mean, this is going to upset the biggest evangelists of Pandora, yep. Namely those people that listen to it all the time and don't really keep their own music libraries anymore.
I anticipate that being a very loud 4%.
I think so too.
So So speaking of loud 4%, Facebook is changing yet again, and I'm sure people will reject this change up front and then get used to it over time, as usually happens. They're going to introduce a ability to filter what kind of streams you're looking at. So on just below the status bar where it says what's on your mind, you know, at the top of Facebook, there are going to be four different kinds of streams you can look at. And that's going to be top stories, which is the default you have now. Most recent, which is like a reverse chronological order. And photos and music, what people are listening to on Spotify and the like. So I kind of like this. This seems interesting to me. Now, it's not launched yet, so we will be seeing it sometime in the future. Possibly on Thursday, according to TechCrunch. But
yeah, we will be expecting some backlash from that.
Oh, yeah. There's always backlash, and I'm sure people get used to it, though.
Right. Well, Facebook may be beating Google Plus, but they're not taking that lying down. They're adding a feature that Facebook has had for a while, which is the ability to sign into third-party apps through your Google Plus account. So if you go to something like OpenTable, you can now use OpenTable with your Google Plus account, like you could with your Facebook account before. They've also got Fitbit and Flickster and Shazam, and they're going to be adding lots more soon.
So they're going to be that other person in the list with OpenID, Facebook, Amazon. Who else does it? Anyway, they're going to be in that list of people that you can sign into other sites with. And
exactly.
that kind of makes sense. I'm not sure why they're rolling it into Google Plus, but it makes sense for Google to do that.
Maybe they just thought that they would get more participation that way.
Perhaps. So Chrome beta for Android is going to be supporting that Opera-style server-side rendering kind of compression on their Google Chrome browser for Android. Reportedly, they can decrease the amount of data that you're using, at least in the browser, by about 50%.
Great news for people with Android phones who have data plan limits.
Yeah, definitely so. And it's interesting to see, you know, we just talked about Opera buying Skyfire with a similar kind of technology. And it'll be interesting to see how this goes with a larger audience.
Now, if you want to get this right now, you have to download the Chrome beta separately and then turn this proxy feature on.
Right. And speaking of Android browsers, Opera has also completely redone its current version of its browser on Android. So they've got a first beta out there in the wild, and you can go have a look.
Looks nicer than the iOS version, but that's not saying all that much.
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay, and in lock screen bypass bug news, remember we were talking about Apple. They had a lock screen bug 4 years ago. They fixed it, and then it came back 2 years ago, and then they fixed it, and then it came back this year with iOS 6, and they released an update that hasn't fixed it yet, but hopefully a new update is coming soon. Well, iOS is not the only one that has this problem. Samsung is now having a similar lock screen bypass bug. So if your phone is locked and someone follows a certain set of instructions, they can get through and access all of your data. This applies to, well, there's one bug for the Galaxy Note 2 and a different bug for the Samsung Galaxy S3.
And Internet Explorer 10 has finally arrived for Windows 7, reads the headline from Ars Technica. And it looks just like Internet Explorer 9. It's got some speed increases, and it seems interesting. It was available previously on Windows 8, and it is now being pushed down to Windows 7. So good to see them move forward with that.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, that's it for the afterburner. So let's turn them down.
Yes, turn them down. You can unbuckle your seatbelt and relax. We'll get into the end user stories, and we've got a pretty good one. Looks like a iOS story. What's going on here?
It's a new feature for YouTube on iOS, but I think it applies for Android as well. The YouTube app, can now beam video to the Xbox, the PS3. It could already do the Apple TV, and certain smart TVs can do it as well.
Yeah,
so you load up a video, you load up a YouTube video on your phone, and then you press a button, and then it's on your TV.
Right, and it's not like AirPlay, right? It's not actually streaming the video from your phone to the TV. It's basically giving your TV a link that your TV is then opening, right?
Yeah, so, but it all happens invisibly.
Right, it all happens auto-magically.
Except that you have to manually pair an Xbox or a PS3 beforehand if you want it to work.
So they've got the same notion. If there's a URL out there, I think it's youtube.com/TV, and you can do this right in the browser. So they're starting to roll this out to all the platforms. And I know Android has done this for a little while now, and it's good to see iOS jump on the bandwagon as well.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't know you could do it from the web.
Yeah, I think it's youtube.tv. Let me check before we leave here. Yes, it is indeed youtube.com/TV. And what's kind of cool is on my home theater PC, I can put a link in Media Center to youtube.com/TV, and then I can get the same kind of functionality.
That is very cool. Very cool. Of course, I have Apple TV, and I mean, I have a PS3, I guess. Maybe I could try it with that, but I usually use Apple TV, so that's kind of all I need.
Yeah, well, you've got your own remote for the Apple TV that can do something like this, right?
Maybe. No, not really.
Does it not have a YouTube service built into it?
Do you mean my iPod Touch remote?
Right.
No, it's too old for the YouTube app.
Okay. That makes a little more sense. Yeah, well, so it's kind of interesting. I'd like to see this roll out everywhere. This should be everywhere.
It sounds like it pretty much is everywhere.
Yeah, it pretty much is already.
Oh, except for Windows Phone, sorry.
Yeah, except for Windows Phone. That's the X factor there.
But if you can do it from the web, maybe you can do it from your phone on the web.
Well, no, because it's the TV side is the website. So I would need a remote app
from
YouTube. And Google has been really cagey about YouTube on Windows Phone. Microsoft has complained about them not being allowed to make an app, so they have to make an app that just links to a web app. So there's some possible funny business going on there with the Windows Phone YouTube app.
Okay.
Now there is a third-party app that's pretty good called MetroTube, but it doesn't have this kind of feature.
Does it have any sort of beaming or streaming?
I haven't used it like that, so I'm not terribly sure, but I don't think so.
All right. Well, I have a couple of stories here which are about new computer control technologies. You thought touchscreens were the end-all, be-all. Well, there are a couple of companies that are launching products this year that have something to say about it. The first, and I think we've mentioned it in passing before, is called the Leap Motion. And what it is, it's a little USB box that sits in front of your computer. It's about a half an inch tall by 3 inches wide, and it has a sensor that is able to detect your hands in the air above it. So you can move your hand around in 3D space, manipulating things on the screen without having to touch the screen.
Right. So the idea is kind of that Minority Report heads-up display, and you wave your hands in the air in front of you.
Yeah, except Minority Report was just a giant screen wall that you touched. This is supposedly more comfortable because you don't have to reach your arm as far, and more versatile because you have three-dimensional manipulation.
Yeah, I don't know about this for general computing, but I could see some kind of niche where, artists or something like this, some people like this would be able to use this device effectively. I'm not sure it applies to general computing, do you?
I think it really could apply to general computing, and it's going to depend entirely upon what developers do with it.
Yeah, that's true.
Some developers who signed up for their development program have the device now and a bunch of tools that help them design new interfaces. But I can't imagine it's an easy thing, even for an experienced programmer, to develop an entirely new interface paradigm, using just waving your hand around. I mean, certainly simple things could be achieved, but that wouldn't necessarily be better than just a touchscreen or a trackpad or whatever it is you're using already. But if they come up with something that's really useful, imagine a system where you could see a virtual keyboard and all you had to do was move your fingers around. There wouldn't need to be a full physical keyboard, and for certain people that would be highly advantageous. Another thing is that instead of getting a touchscreen computer, or a whole brand new computer with a touchscreen, this would be a much cheaper solution. Or maybe you don't want a touch your touchscreen, you know, and get fingerprints all over it. This would be a better solution for that as well. So it's going to be available to consumers sometime in May, and it only costs $80, which is about the same price as a trackpad or a mouse from Apple.
Yeah, that's a great price point. I can't believe they hit that.
I can't either, but it must be something to do with the technology, which they won't even tell us what's in it. I'm sure as soon as it hits the market, someone's going to take it apart and figure it out. They've actually said in interviews that they expect that to happen. But in the meantime, they are keeping the technology inside the Leap Motion box a closely guarded secret.
So you said they're shipping it May 13th?
May 13th, that's right. I said, pre-orders on May 13th, May 19th to the public.
Right, so this is extremely exciting. I can't wait to see how this works and if it's good.
Right.
Because I don't know either of those things yet, and it looks very interesting at very least.
No matter what, you need a table or some kind of surface for this. It needs to be sitting on a flat surface and pointed up, and your hands need to be able to use the air above it. So it would be great if you could eliminate the need for a keyboard using this thing. That would save you a lot of space, but you still need to have some kind of table. I mean, if the table could be smaller, that would be great. But there's another company working on something where you don't even need a table or a computer or anything, and it's called the Myo or the Mio. It's M-Y-O. And the way this thing works is it's an armband. It goes around your forearm, and it tracks the movements of your muscles, your finger muscles that are all in your forearm. And so when you make different gestures with your fingers, it can tell just from the band around your arm.
Yeah, that's very clever. So they're getting information from a side channel, which is your forearm, and trying to interpret what it means that your fingers are doing. That's really cool.
Right. So this is going to be a much more of a niche product, I think, anyway, because you only have so many gestures, and it has to be developed in exactly the same way by a developer who's making new gesture paradigms. So you probably couldn't just type things in midair, but you know your hand can make a lot of different gestures, and this armband should be able to interpret them pretty accurately. And the great thing about this is that it's completely wireless, and it doesn't need any sort of surface, or space or table. I mean, you don't even need to be pointing your hand at the computer because it doesn't care.
And we were just mentioning this previously in the show. It uses Bluetooth, so it uses a wireless standard that's already in all devices. Nice.
Yeah, I'm sure future versions of the Leap Motion will probably have Bluetooth as well. But this one is really cool. One of their taglines is "Unleash your inner Jedi."
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. I like the way it's phrased there. They suggest that you release or unleash your inner Jedi.
Well, so a lot of fewer people will probably be buying this. It's going to cost $149 pre-order, and they say it'll ship late this year, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see what they're up to, but very interesting prospect, isn't it? Are you ready for the new interface paradigm? Are you over touch?
I think both of these could be really cool. It's still really hard to say whether touchscreen desktops and laptops are going to be a dominant paradigm in the future of computing. And these just could be some viable other options for people who maybe don't want to, you know, reach all the way over to a touchscreen and get their fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, because you think about it.
Or can't do it for some other reason.
If you think about the time frame for smartphones right now, you know, these things really, the idea of a glass touchscreen smartphone came into vogue in 2007, right? So we're in the, like, Intel 286 days or something like that. And I'm looking for some of these kind of things to come in and take us by surprise and be the next new thing for people like us who are forward-looking. you know, maybe can get a sneak peek at these kind of things. But, you know, our children's generation will laugh at our touchscreens, and maybe they'll be using something like this. So I feel like it's a little peek into the future of some sort. And I, for you at least, it's a peek into the present.
Or even the recent past. But I'm so glad that you mentioned glass touchscreens, because I've got one more new technology to talk about this week. And that is the replacement for touchscreen glass. And thinking about this, the first place my mind would go would be some sort of like flexible plastic or polymer, you know, something that can bend instead of breaking.
Right.
But one of the companies at Mobile World Congress last week had a better idea, and that's just, why not use something tougher than glass? And they decided to use sapphire. They figured out a way to grow and cut films of sapphire that are big enough to cover a smartphone. And so you could either install a very strong screen cover on top of your glass, or you could replace the entire glass with sapphire. And it's the second strongest clear material after diamonds that we know of.
Yeah, so I could imagine some kind of upgrade kit that iFixit would sell or something like that. You've been repairing iPhones for a while now, so I could see that happening.
It would probably have to be a little bit more of a specialized process, kind of like the Zag Invisible Shields, where you don't have to go to a Best Buy or someone and have them install it professionally, but you won't really get a second chance to install it. The adhesive has to go on completely clear. You know, there can't be any dirt or any bubbles in there. Once it goes on, it's not coming off. So you probably want to have a professional install it. But considering that, you know, it should probably only cost $50 or $100 to start. I'm not sure. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, and so this is kind of neat. They're not mining it from the earth. They're actually synthetically grown sapphire. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And it makes it much easier to control and cheaper. I mean, I don't think you can find a sapphire big enough to cover a phone, but it is hard enough that you can smash it with a rock and it will not even have a scratch.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that, having shattered at least one screen on a smartphone.
Yeah, I've done it a couple of times as well, but I've seen fewer and fewer broken smartphone screens as the years have gone on.
Yeah,
I used to make a decent amount of money fixing iPhone screens, and the requests are fewer and farther between every year.
Well, I think two things have happened. Phones have gotten more durable. For example, my HTC 8X, it almost has a case built around it already, the way it's constructed. And the other thing is that people have gotten wise to it and are using cases now.
Yeah, I guess a lot more people are using cases, and that's a big part of it.
Yeah, probably so. All right, well, that will do it for the end user stories. Let's get into the tip of the week. And as usual, Mr. Marr, you have one for us. So what you got?
I do. So this is a new service that I discovered by way of Lifehacker called Cloud Cafe. It is a free web app that will link up to your Dropbox, Evernote, Facebook, YouTube, Google Drive, a bunch more. I'm sure they're adding a bunch of services as they continue to work on it, but it indexes and aggregates all of them so that you can find whatever it is that you're looking for in the cloud.
Cool. So just like anyone else, you probably have at least three of those services, right? And this will aggregate them all for you. That seems pretty fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you don't need full cloud aggregation across multiple platforms and file types, if you, say, just wanted to organize your pictures, you can use a different web app that I found called EverPix. Now, this one is pretty cool since it's picture specific. It'll pull from Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Flickr, Picasa, Gmail, and I'm sure they're adding more things too. It organizes, it tags, it highlights, it makes albums. It does face recognition. It does place recognition when possible. Just about any way that you can organize photos, this will do it across almost all of your cloud networks and put all of your photos in one place. It's pretty cool. So I think Facebook especially is really great because it'll pull photos that you didn't take but that you were tagged in, and then you can compare those to the photos that you took.
So this is like the iPhoto of the cloud, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's if iPhoto could pull all of these things, that would be fantastic, but it can't. iPhoto only works on pictures that you take and then import. And Everpix can import all of them just by signing into those services.
Right, and is this,
this one is free, but only for the last 12 months of photos. Otherwise, it's $49 a year to have your entire archive.
All right. Well, if you've got a ton of photos across a ton of services, I'd imagine $50 a year would be worth it.
Yeah, if you're really into photos and you have a lot of photos online and you want to aggregate them and categorize them, then yeah, $50 a year is not that bad.
So there's another way that you can aggregate things with the Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi, which has come out. These guys are on Kickstarter, and they've created something called the Bartendro, and this is an automated bartender using the Raspberry Pi and their own like 3D printed self-made pumps. So it you put like a straw down into various bottles of alcohol and juice and soda and the like, and it'll actually siphon the liquid up through these pumps they've created, and then it will all come out one straw on the front, so that they mix and aggregate all of the various components, and it all filters into one glass immediately. So pretty cool stuff, and you can control it via a smartphone app. So they've got an app that you can select the drink from, and then you put your glass out, and it will mix you the drink of your dreams.
Yeah, I think this is really great, and it's very similar to the one we featured a couple months ago that was made with an Arduino, but this one looks really nice and looks practically portable.
Well, the they have one that is just called the ShotBot. And all it does is pour you a shot, basically, automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a couple other tiers going up to the highest level, which has 15 bottles and is $2,500. So I think it'll take me a while to save up the money, but this should definitely happen.
Right. Well, they have $63,000 of $135 planned. So they're about halfway to go with 25 days left on their Kickstarter.
I'm pretty hopeful.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, I think that means it's time to end the show. Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you on Twitter or Clefarf, how would they get at you?
Well, my Clefarf handle is in a language that hasn't been invented yet, but Twitter will work just fine. It's at TaylorPhone.
And I am at Chris Hale Barnes if you'd like to contact me. And together, we are at The End User. So thank you everyone for listening to the show, and of course you can find more information including the show notes at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts, of course. You can listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast. You can also send us some feedback at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, as I mentioned, at theenduser. Join us live in the chat as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Moore.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye. We'll